House will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Here.
Barlow.
Here.
Berger excused. Blake.
Here.
Blevins.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Coleman.
Here.
Connolly. Connolly.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Eklund.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Filer.
Here.
Freeman.
Here.
Gay.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Greer.
Here.
Green.
Here.
Halverson. Halverson. Harshman.
Here.
Harvey. Harvey. Hunt. Hutchings.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Kasparik.
Here.
Kirkbride.
Here.
Croker.
Here.
Crone.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Laux.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Northrup.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Paxton.
Here.
Petroff. Pieperinen. Reeder. Simlick.
Here.
Summers.
Here.
Stepson. Teeters,
here.
Throne,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Walters,
here.
Watt,
here.
Wilson,
here.
Winters,
here.
Swanitzer Dan,
here.
Swanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Halverson,
excused.
Halverson excused, 58 present, 2 excused.
The prayer of the day is offered by Reverend Mark Marston, representing the First United Methodist Church, Cheyenne.
Let us pray. Our Lord, Creator of all things, to these men and women who are in this room, you have given a great call and great responsibility. But our Lord, you have told us, to whom much is given, much is expected. Our Lord, you are the greatest power in the universe. Give to them who are in this room today the understanding to take great risks, but also, our Lord, to be conservative when that is called for. Give them the guidance to feel your power and your wisdom, the patience when it is needed to compromise. Our Lord, we ask that you may be with them, that they might feel the wonderful history that is here in this state and in this room. We give you great thanks that they may understand that they have before them great challenges, great responsibilities, and also the power of a wonderful future. For these things we pray through Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good to see you again.
Yes, sir. Yes. Thank you, sir. I'm sorry, you are.
Doesn't matter. Wherever you want to. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for having
you.
With that order of business of Journal Committee report?
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 21st, 2013 has been read and recommends that it be approved. It is signed by Representatives Filer and Winters.
And granting myself privilege of the floor today, the guest page of the day making his seventh consecutive appearance as guest page, the most senior page of the day, my son Thomas Edwin Lubnow III. Yay! Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the 62nd, it's my honor to introduce a couple of great Cody folks that are here today. We've got Jan Eldridge, who's the director of our senior center. And she's here today. She'll be hosting the AARP dinner tonight, so I hope you guys have RSVP'd for that. And her husband, Bruce Eldridge, who is the director of the Buffalo Bill Historical Center, the outstanding museum here in the West. So please join me in welcoming them to the house.
Welcome to the house. Representative Blickery.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please.
Mr. Speaker, fellow representatives, it's my pleasure to introduce one of the directors of our senior center in Campbell County, Ann Rossi. And Ann, do you have some folks from Gillette with you? All right.
We're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
We have one message. Message number 144. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 58, driver's license suspension for child support non-payment. The ayes were 13, noes were 17. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Joining us back behind the bar today is our doctor of the day, Yusuf Rahala, MD from Cheyenne. Welcome, doctor. We're at that order of business, introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 210.
House Bill number 210, introduced by Representative Gay, an act relating to taxation.
First reading of the bill.
I just did that. Okay. I'll do it again. Let me do it right. What do you say? Okay, an act relating to taxation.
House Bill number 210 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 209.
House Bill number 209, as introduced by Representative Burkhart.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program.
House Bill 209 is referred to Committee number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 207.
House Bill number 207, introduced by Representative Crone.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to animals.
House Bill 207 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. We're now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 133, Human Trafficking, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred as House Bill 163, Adjunct Professor Incentives, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeters, signed by Representative Teeters. The Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 172, School Districts Leasing of Capital Assets, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeters, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
Are there any re-referrals? Mr. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move to re-refer House Bill 163 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it is so ordered. Any other re-referrals? We're at that order of business of bills on second reading and second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 31.
House Bill number 31, as introduced by Representative Byrd, an act relating to the Secretary of State.
House Bill 31 has an amendment. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 31 and ask for its favorable introduction. This on page 1, line 16, deletes the word annually. I discussed this yesterday. My concerns in the bill when it said shall annually print the following documents. When talking to the people who work for us who draft amendments, they thought this was the best fix for my concerns. That just says the Secretary of State shall print the following documents and make those available to the public. And every time they get updated, when there is a need to update the Constitution or the State Directory, they should so do that. So I'd stand for any questions if anyone has some.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I deem this as a friendly amendment and urge the adoption.
Any other discussion? We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 31. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment carries. House Bill 31 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Whip, could you come up here The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 35.
House Bill number 35, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to search and rescue operations.
House Bill 35 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 39.
House Bill number 39, as introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
House Bill 39 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We are, let's see. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 76. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 76, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to criminal procedure.
There's a second reading amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 76 and ask for your favorable consideration. We've had investigative subpoenas under law, but they were mostly due to child pornography. Now there's a situation where we've broadened that to Internet fraud. With the advent of the Internet cloud, there are some pieces of information that are restricted by other state and federal statutes, particularly medical information and mental health information. What this amendment does is it says that if there is that kind of information involved, you have to follow the processes set up for those kind of information, whether they're a federal or a state statute, to comply with the subpoena, just to add that extra layer of protection so that upon request, your medical information isn't disclosed to everybody accidentally, and I urge your consideration.
For your first time, Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd urge you to vote aye on this also. I think you actually already had a process. Normally what you can do is you can do a quash the subpoena if you had a privilege you were asserting, but this makes it clear, and I think it was already in existing law, but there's nothing wrong with adding some suspenders to the belt.
Anyone else for the first time? For the first time? For the second time? Question having been called, all in favor of second reading amendment number one, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one has passed. House Bill 76 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 78.
House Bill number 78, introduced by Representative Wallace, an act relating to administration of government.
House Bill 78, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122.
House Bill number 122 is introduced by Representative Petroff, an act relating to alcohol.
House Bill 122, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 139.
House Bill number 139 is introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to the Uniform Trust Code.
House Bill 139, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 153.
House Bill number 153, as introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to the Interstate Compact on Juveniles.
House Bill 153, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 154.
House Bill number 154, as introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to public defenders.
House Bill 154, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 170.
House Bill number 170 is introduced by Representative Madden, an act relating to sales tax.
House Bill 170, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 171.
House Bill number 171, as introduced by Representative Madden, an act relating to taxation.
House Bill 171, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the consent list consisting of the following bills. House Bill 36, House Bill 42, House Bill 158, and House Bill 160.
Reading clerk will read the bills.
House Bill number 36, as introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to offenses against property, renaming the crime of larceny and modifying elements of the crime, removing offenses of wrestling and unlawful taking of motor vehicle fuel from the renamed theft statute, modifying elements of wrestling, clarifying and modifying penalties for certain offenses regarding failure to obtain a brand permit, repealing unnecessary provisions, conforming statutes, and providing for an effective date be enacted by the state of Wyoming. House Bill number 42, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to land use planning, repealing provisions related to the State Level Land Use Planning Act, repealing specified provisions for local zoning and land use planning, providing conforming amendments, providing definitions, providing for an effective date, be enacted by the state of Wyoming. House Bill number 158, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to motor vehicle registration, amending the time for registration of a motor vehicle upon transfer of ownership and providing for an effective date be enacted by the state of Wyoming. House Bill number 160, as introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to vehicle sales and use tax, amending the time for payment of sales and use tax for certain sales of vehicles, conforming interest and fee provisions, and providing for an effective date, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger excused. Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd. Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingrey,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker, Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 36, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 42, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 158, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Laux, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Stubson, aye. Tano. Gay, aye. Tano. Miller, aye. Tano. Greer, aye. Tano. Simlick, aye. Tano. Winters, aye. Tano. Nicholas, aye. Tano. Zwanitzer Dan, aye. Tano. Zwanitzer Dave, aye. Tano. Hutchings, aye. Tano. Walters, aye. Tano. Teeters, aye. Tano. Reader, aye. Tano. Watt, aye. Tano. Mr. Speaker, aye. Tano. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 41 aye, 18 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 160, are there any changes? Croker, aye. Tano. Burkhart, aye. Tano. Laux, aye. Tano. Reader, aye. Tano. Gay, aye. Tano. Walters, aye. Tano. Miller, aye. Tano. Stubson, aye. Tano. Greer, aye. Tano. Watt, aye. Tano. Simlick, aye. Tano. Winters, aye. Tano. Zwanitzer Dan, aye. Tano. Zwanitzer Dave, aye. Tano. Teeters, aye. Tano. Wallace, aye. Tano. Mr. Speaker, aye. Tano. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 42 aye, 17 no, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 36, 42, 158, and 160 have passed the House. We're now on that order of business of third reading and final passage. Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Personal privilege, if I might.
Please.
I would like to introduce and draw to your attention two gentlemen. Jeff Holsinger, who is the President and CEO of Volunteers of America, located in Sheridan. Chase Brothers Property, Galen Chase, who I've known he and his family for so many years, ranch in the far eastern section of Sheridan County, are both here. He's a board member of Volunteers of America. Please welcome these fine gentlemen. Thank you.
Gentlemen, welcome to the House. Representative Campbell.
Privilege of the House, Mr. Speaker.
Please.
I would like to introduce our senior citizen director from Shoshone, and she's here to welcome us this afternoon, Lindy Lynn.
Welcome to the House. We are now on that order of business of third reading and final passage. The only bill for our consideration is House Bill 38.
House Bill number 38, as introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to water. Be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 38, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger excused. Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer. Green. Green. Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton. Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Piperine.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Miller. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? Madden? Barlow? Wallace? Northrup? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
Thought there for a second we were having an air raid. Chairman Harshman, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on your request, if folks could pick out their goldenrod, there's the newest ones in your tray today. It's dated at the top right-hand corner, 1/22/2013. Just wanted to take a minute. Had lots of questions and just really tell you what I think are the most important lines to look at. Does everybody have that? And okay. Now, you can see there's two columns. The first column is the governor's rec with the October Craig, and then the second column is the governor's rec with the January Craig. Now, the JC completed their work Friday on the markup of the budget bill. That bill is currently being written now during this week time. Make sure there's no errors. We will get back together as a JC and vote on that next Monday, and then you'll see this governor's October Craig drop off. And then you'll see January Craig, and you'll see JAC, Govs Rex and JAC Rex. Okay, and so that's where you'll see the significant differences in what we did as the legislature. But a couple of things as you look at the front page, you see the first total of funds available, $3,452,000,000. That number is froze, so that's not going to change. So if you want to write beside that, froze. That number will not change during the session. Another number that will not change is that near the bottom of that first column where it says less statutory reserve 5%, it's actually the last number before the zero at the bottom of total traditional funds available. It's $104,350,000. You can write froze beside that. That's a statutory number. We require the governor to keep a 5% statutory reserve. So that number is not going to change throughout the session. Okay, and then if we go down to expenditures, the next group, you can see from last year's budget bill, $3.2 billion. And then you can see Gov's Rec, $69 million. You see that? $69,176,000. You see the second number? It says 2013 budget general fund appropriation Gov's Rec, $69.1 million. And it has a number 2 as a footnote beside it. Well, that number is a net. So if you want to write beside that, say that's a net of page 2. And I'll talk about page 2 here in just a second. So that number is a net. And then the other 2012 bills, that number won't change. And then the next number down there is $80,500. Right now, there are four bills that have passed Committee of the Whole that have appropriations in them. Okay, on both sides. So that's a total number. So you could write total of current bills. That's the $80,500. And that number will change daily as more bills with appropriations pass Committee of the Whole. The next number, $15 million, that's a done deal. That's already been transferred to the LSRA last November. Okay, so that number will not change. And I think probably the most important number is this $21.4 million. This is probably the most important number on the page. So if you'll put an asterisk that and really right beside it, this is money that's on the table for expenditure. Okay, and what we don't expend will transfer to the LSRA. So it says $21,460,820. It has footnote number 6 beside it. That's the most important number. And why is it Is it $2 million more than the $19 million in the October, Craig? Because we had just a little bit more money, okay, in the profile. So that's the key. Now, when you see next week the JAC number, that number will be $28 million. Because of our actions, we cut a little more. We used some different funding sources. And so really in the JAC recs, it's about $28 million on the table for savings or spending. Okay. Last thing, Mr. Speaker, if I could, if you'd flip to page 2, which is the backside of page 1, and then I'll be finished. And here's kind of the difficult part. If you go down to appropriations, you see the first part on, this is general fund. You see the first part is revenues. The second section is appropriations. There's really, you don't see a number that's a starting point. And I spoke with a couple of representatives yesterday. And if you just want to keep to memory, the starting point this session was roughly $90 million, is 89 point some million. It was 84. October, Craig boosted it up a little bit. But the starting point was about $90 million. You won't find that number there. But as we go down through these, Mr. Speaker, you will see that the second number, $131,800,000. Now, you can see those are Gov's rec. Those are spending. If you want to put that beside, those are the Gov's recs for spending. And just below that, that does not have brackets indicating it's a plus, is $62 million. Those are the cuts. Those are the cuts that came through your standing committees and the governor's recommendations, his proposed cuts. So spending of $131 million, cuts of $62 million, you know that the starting point was around $90 million, so that takes us back to that front page where you wrote the number, or you wrote the note net beside footnote number 2. That's $69 million, so that's the net number, where we started with 190, or started with 90, cut 60, so the real starting point was 150, and we spent 130. Okay? So that's a net number. Okay, and then, Mr. Speaker, I think the very last thing on page 2 that I'd just draw your attention to is farther down under appropriations. You see where it says House Bill 78, budget review process, $23,000? You see that down there? Now, you will see there are 4 bills. So that's all the bills that have passed Committee of the Whole, and they will be updated every day and until they're killed or changed or adopted. They will stay there, and they will always be listed in numerical order of the bill. And so, for example, as you look at House Bill 78, it's new today. It wasn't on yesterday's goldenrod, that $23,000. Okay, House Bill 116, $16,000, that was there yesterday. And the next one, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership, $4,000, that was there yesterday. And then finally, Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep, that's new today. So the new total of bills that have passed Committee of the Whole is $80,500. And I believe that's reflected on the front page as well. It is on footnote number 4 under expenditures on the front page. You see that? So that's the total of bills. So you could write that note by footnote number 4, total of bills. Okay, but once again, I think the most important, Mr. Speaker, most important line is line number 6. That's kind of our moving balance. And that'll change daily as bills come on. Okay? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to try to keep us informed. We have some deadlines that are starting to loom on the horizon, so I just try to keep everyone aware. Tomorrow is not a deadline for us, but just illustrative of what's going on. Tomorrow is the last day for Senate files to be submitted to LSO for introduction. So they're going to hit that cutoff. We hit that cutoff on January the 28th. So you've got until the 28th to finish drafting bills, getting all your bright ideas that have been boiling up here, reduced to writing, and get them to the LSO in a form where they can get them in. And then that'll be the cutoff. And then shortly after that, February the 1st is going to be the last day for bills to be reported out of the committee in the House of Origin. So February 1st is a real big day. Four committees. General file for today is as listed on the yellow sheet. I may have some changes as the day goes on. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of resolving into Committee of the Whole, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Representative Crone.
Thank you very much. Before we get going, it reminds me today of what Buffalo Bill said when he was on the porch of the Irma Hotel on July 4th, 1903, when he said, if I ever get a car, I want to have two number ones on my license plate. And it just reminds me of that. So the Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill number 95. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 95 is introduced by Representative Blake, an act relating to public safety, amending railroad crossing safety requirements to include on-track equipment and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 95, Railroad Crossings On-Track Vehicles, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Yagi, Larson, McKim, those who voted no, Representative Hutchings, Laux, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by David Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 95 do pass, and I turn over the explanation of the bill to the fine representative from House District number 39,
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 62nd, I bring you House Bill 95, which started its genesis last year when I was talking to some maintenance away employees who work for the two major railroads in our state. This statute was first put into the statute book in 1925. And maintenance way equipment back then was a hand cart. They'd throw all their tools on it, go down the track. Nowadays we have track equipment that's unbelievable. I had pictures for the committee, and if anybody wants to look at some of those pictures, come up to my desk later and I'll show them to you. But some of these equipment travel at a high rate of speed, and I just wanted to get protection for the public, for the maintenance way employees. It's all about workplace safety in my book. I've seen some really close calls at crossing gates with this maintenance away equipment, and I would answer any questions, and please don't derail this bill and keep it on track.
Any further debate? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 95 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries. What's that? Privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Up in our balcony over here from the largest county in Wyoming, and that would be Sweetwater County, number 4 on your license plate, is our county clerk, Mr. Dale Davis, and his deputy clerk, Vicki Easton. Please welcome him.
Representative Yagi.
Privilege of the floor.
Privilege of the floor granted.
Thank you. We have here from southwest Wyoming, the Lincoln County and Evanston County clerks. We have Lana Wilcox, Gene Wagner, and April Brunsky coming over to see how we do business here. Welcome them. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Privilege of the floor, granted.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to introduce to you Mr. Deloitte Corbert from the town of Thermopolis, there in the middle of the state. Thank you very much.
All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 127. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 127 is introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to veterans, specifying a procedure for placing a veteran designation on driver's licenses and identification cards, specifying duties of the Veterans Commission, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 127, Driver's License Veterans Designation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagie, Larson, Laux, McKim, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendations that House Bill 127 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I would go ahead and address the Standing Committee Amendment. Folks, the amendment just basically did two things. One of them is that we took the we added the word "an honorable discharge" into the statutes. And the other thing we did, we deleted the fact that they are in active duty. And the reason we deleted the active duty part, because by definition, to be a veteran, you have to have served in the active duty. And so I would call for the question on the amendment.
Question being called on the amendment. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. A motion carries back to the bill. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to turn over the explanation of the bill to the fine chairman from Judiciary.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill came about, a lot of you get the different publications that we get from different organizations, and last March I noticed a map of the United States, and it had all these states colored in that had already gone ahead and done this, and I noticed that we were one of the states that had not done this, so I contacted the Veterans Commission and YDOT and talked to them about the possibility of doing this. And then over the summer, more and more veterans actually became aware of the program the other states were doing, and they started contacting the Veterans Commission asking if Wyoming could start doing it. And so then I decided to bring the bill to implement it. What it allows for is on the front of the driver's license. So on your driver's license, a small V goes on there if you're a veteran. There's a few different reasons for that. One is just simply recognition, that if you're a veteran, you're being recognized. It's on your driver's license. People would see that. Another reason is just simply fraud. There are many people that say that they're a veteran, that type of thing. This would cut down on that. You would have it on your driver's license. It would clearly state it. And the one I really like, and the better reason is you can get discounts. And for those that are veterans, could get discounts at different restaurants and other types of places. And that they can show that driver's license with the V on it, they can obtain that. The process is and YDOT was real clear, they liked the idea as long as we weren't making their lines longer. As with the Real ID Act, as most of you know, the lines have gotten quite long at YDOT, and they've done a good job of working their way through that. But they didn't want us adding to the problem. So what we worked out was a system that I think is going to work pretty nicely. It's actually going to be the Veterans Commission that will be making the determination as to whether or not this person's a veteran or not. And the testimony was from the Veterans Commission, they actually have a whole database and a system through the federal government, and they can actually check that pretty quickly through they had form names and stuff like that. But they check it pretty quickly. They figure out that, yes, you are a veteran. They then notify YDOT, and YDOT then has that notification. YDOT then places it on the driver's license of that person. That is essentially the entire bill.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one small question for the sponsor. It looks like when you look at 317.115, that it says the division shall issue to every qualifying applicant of driver's license. The driver's license shall include
but not be limited to the following information. It occurs to me that if you are a veteran, it's got to be on your driver's license. And I'm just wondering if, say, you had a veteran that didn't want that on there. I mean, does this law preclude him from having a driver's license without that V on it?
Chairman Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good question. If you look over on page 2, line 22, it says, if the applicant wishes to have a veteran designation, then they would turn in the application. So if you didn't turn in the application, then they wouldn't put the V. So one is saying, if you wish, you turn in the application. The other is saying, if you did turn in the application and it turned out you were, then they shall put it on there. But they only would put it on if you filled out the application to have it.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question that arose in my mind as I read through this is really, to what end are we doing this? And as I heard the explanation, I heard reference to, you know, veterans discounts at restaurants and those sorts of things. And is that really what we're getting at here? And if that's really solely what we're getting at, you know, my assumption would be, and maybe it's wrong, so I want to know if this is wrong, that the VA gives out ID cards or gives out some sort of indication of veteran status, and so why do we as a state need to do it as well? I guess are my two questions.
Chairman Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good question also. The main reason is mostly recognition and to cut down on fraud, but also the discount. So there's three different good reasons. The other thing, it's becoming somewhat consistent across the nation. We sort of don't want to be the one state that's not recognizing our veterans on their driver's license. And I just forgot the last part of his question.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, the second part of the question was the existence of other of IDs from, for example, federally issued IDs for veterans.
Chairman Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Veterans Commission testified in that committee, and maybe someone on that committee remembers this better than I do, but he was saying that actually not everyone would have a VA card. He was given examples of certain veterans that would not have the identification that other veterans have. And it had to do with your age and what type of service you did. You're correct that most veterans are going to have some way of showing it. This was just more of an easier way of showing it just on the driver's license.
Mr. Vice Chairman Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a veteran who has nothing that shows that I'm a veteran other than a DD-214, which I don't carry around with me. And I'd be very pleased if you would vote for this, because it's simply a recognition of those people who served. Thank you.
Any further debate? Question being called? All those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 127 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 25. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 25 is introduced by Representative Wallace, an act relating to parimutuel wagering, distinguishing between live and simulcast racing and definitions, redefining simulcasting, providing for dispersal of fees, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 25, simulcasting of parimutuel events, do respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye: Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, and Dan Zwollenser, and it is signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Simlick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 25 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. I would ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment. This was not really considered as a part of what was they're trying to accomplish in this bill. It's not in the enacting clause of the bill to go into page 4, line 19, and increase the compensation from $50 to $100 for the members on the commission. So if we want to do that, there's other ways that we can do that. It was kind of an oversight on the part of the committee. It was brought to us that might be a problem. So I will ask you to vote, call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment, and ask you to vote no.
Is there any further debate on the Standing Committee Amendment? Representative Wallace, do you have anything on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. Amendment fails. Back on the bill. Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 52.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you, members of the 62nd, the House Bill 25, simulcasting of paramutual events. Paramutual commission was formed clear back in the 60s. This is something that we've had in our state for a long, long time. At one point, we had a vibrant and robust horse racing industry in this state, very nearly completely died out, and is now struggling to come back to life. This is huge for the horse industry. The horse industry is fighting a losing battle against casinos, state lotteries, online gambling. This state's paramutual event model, which subsidizes Wyoming's live horse racing, needs to evolve utilizing new technology to counter these negative effects. At one point, we had 19 live races going on in the state. We had 4 in 2012, and right now we have less than 25 Wyoming-bred running horses in the state. What this bill does is it allows the operators of off-track betting parlors, which exist today with live simulcasting, to use this new technology that provides opportunities for the consumer to participate in games of skill based on historic races. This new technology enables the operators to mask the location, date, time, and actual names of the horses in the races that have been run. But the consumer has to make his or her wager based on the history as shown on the machine, similar to those statistics offered on the betting program at a live race. Counties, cities, and towns where the OTBs are located will receive 1% of the proceeds under this bill. These contributions can be split not only between the racehorse owners and breeders, but also owners who participate in harness racing, cutter racing, chariot racing, chuck wagon racing, roping events, and barrel racing. I think that one thing not a lot of people know is that Wyoming is unique in the ability to have paramutual events around rodeo events, which fits our heritage and our traditions quite well, in my humble opinion. The reason that this bill is needed is because the additional income that this new technology can generate will help our struggling horse industry while providing additional revenue resources for cities and counties. There's 13 out of our 23 counties right now where the voters have already voted to allow these kinds of events. And so if all of those cities and counties where these facilities were located would be able to benefit. And the benefits are substantial for a state like Wyoming. The LSO's fiscal note estimates that within the next 2-3 years of enacting the bill, we would be able to grow the Wyoming Breeders Award from 2011 level of about $8,500 to $110,000 by 2014, 180,000 by 2015 and 200,000 by 2016. And the reason that's really significant is because that gives incentives to our folks to breed more horses, as well as increasing the value of those Wyoming bred horses. And then also 1% of that revenue stream allocated to cities and counties where the revenue will be generated is estimated to total $275,000 in 2014, grow up to at least $500,000 by 2016. The other thing that I would like to address off the get-go is some of the questions around how this would be regulated and what it actually is. And the pari-mutuel wagering on historic horse races. What is that exactly? It's a system-based type of betting. Utilizes the same basic infrastructure as wagering that as currently and has been done since the late 60s at our Sweetwater Downs currently in Rock Springs, which is the only track that's currently operating. Wyoming Downs is hopefully going to be coming back to life soon. And the bettors get to make their selections, as I mentioned before, based on a database of over 20,000 races. While the patron does not know the name of the horses or the track, they can access all that handicapping information. So, in fact, the bettors wagering against others playing that particular wager, not like a slot machine, which is a random number generator that the bettor is playing against the house. There's a good distinction there. And the regulatory integrity, this is first introduced in Kentucky, and it's gone to a whole new level. And the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission was able to examine the Arkansas rules, regulations, and oversight and work with the industry leaders to improve the situation. Here are four foundation pieces of the historic horse racing regulatory framework. First, we've got the Racing Commissioner's International Model Rules, which the North American Racing and Wagering Regulatory Bodies have all come together, passed these model rules, which are being used in other states, that provide direction and uniformity in the sport and the business of horse racing. We have the Thoroughbred Racing and Protective Bureau, which since the 50s has provided security services to North American thoroughbred racetracks. And as the wagering product has changed, the TRPB has kept pace, now provides important auditing procedures to ensure that all pari-mutuel bets are being placed and tracked in accordance with the rules. We have Gaming Labs International, which is the world's foremost testing lab for gaming and wagering. And every new historic horse racing wager goes through this rigorous testing process. And finally, we have the Wyoming Horse Racing Commission, which, using the Kentucky model, Wyoming will be able to provide a world-class regulatory framework for this historic horse racing. And this bill provides for more than adequate funding to deal with this, and that's money that's generated by the industry itself. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd briefly take you through the bill, which on page 2 of the bill is beginning on line 7, new language. Notwithstanding current law, the commission may authorize and promulgate rules providing for pari-mutuel wagering on events that have previously occurred, utilizing an electronic system or device that affords an opportunity for the exercise of skill or judgment where the outcome is not completely controlled by chance. And then on line 16 and 17, we have new language inserted into the sentence. So simulcasting means the sale of pari-mutuel pools. That's existing language. New language, electronically transmitted live or historic on interstate or intrastate pari-mutuel events as prescribed by the commission. On page 3, we get into the amount that will be distributed to cities and counties. Currently, we have 1.5% of the total amount wagered that goes to the pari-mutuel commission for the support of their regulatory function on any live simulcast events currently, And what this does is preserve that for the live events, but from the new money that would be coming as a result of the ability to have historic pari-mutuel events, only 0.5% of that would go to the agency, which we heard testimony from the commission that that was going to be more than adequate to cover what they needed to be able to responsibly regulate this industry. And the other 1%, and this is all encapsulated in the paragraph, page 3, beginning line 13, would be sent to the cities and counties where those facilities were located, pay an amount equal to 1% total amount wagered attributable to historic pari-mutuel events, shown by the report to the commission to be transferred by the commission to the county and the city or the town in which the permittee is located in equal shares, or to the county alone if the permittee is not located within the boundaries of a city or town. And then bottom of page 3, line 23, new language again. All sums paid to the commission under this act, except contributions from permittees to the Breeder Award Fund, amounts paid under paragraph B, little 3 of this section, fines and penalties are credited to the pari-mutuel account. And then the rest of that is all existing language on the books today. So that, Mr. Chairman, is the bill. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. I just feel compelled to explain my aye vote on this particular bill because in my other life, as I've told members of this particular industry, I work very diligently to make sure nobody goes to participate in this particular business. But understanding the role of government, this is a self-contained industry. It's not state-sponsored, and it's one of those things that when you look at what government is supposed to do, this is to inhibit the working of a private business that is self-contained. That's the reason for that aye vote. Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also was a surprising aye vote on this, considering my history as well. I don't really try to tell people what they should or shouldn't do. It was explained the pari-mutuel betting is self-contained. It's a little different than some other gambling initiatives that the state would receive funding from. This is a love-hate bill for me because I really do like good horses, and Wyoming breeders have a right to benefit from programs that might stimulate the economy there. The horse industry is a strong part of Wyoming's heritage as well as our economy. We're probably better known for using horses rather than racing horses. But if you were to talk to a young rodeo kid about what he needs on his roping horse or whatever, he's going to want speed. So it does kind of apply there. I also voted on it because I felt the whole body probably needed to get into this discussion and understanding of what historic horse racing and pari-mutuel horse racing is. That I may oppose the bill, probably will without, you know, if I don't have some provision in there to know that families that could be damaged by compulsive gambling, and this would. Horse racing, I guess, happens that way. If we could take a percentage like we do for the breeders and throw it into a kitty that takes care of those families left after Dad gambled away the farm. Anyway, I'm curious as to whether there might be an interest in an amendment like that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to have to look into this, but I think we may we may already have that provision. And it, I could sure take a look where I know that in some of the other gaming measures that have come in front of the body during my tenure, we did include that, and I have no objection, but I think we might already have it.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 25 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 25 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 186 is introduced by Representative Petroff. An act relating to taxation and revenue, providing a sales and use tax exemption for equipment purchased to dispense natural gas into motor vehicles as specified, providing a sunset date, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 186, Tax Exemption for Natural Gas Filling Station Equipment, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Northrup, Petroff. Those who voted no, Representative Blickery, Laux, Madden, and Semlich, and it is signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 186 do pass, and I will turn the explanation over to the good representative from House District 16.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 186 provides for a 4-year sales tax exemption for fueling stations for natural gas vehicles, for commercial fueling stations. This body has been looking for a long time, and the state has been looking for a long time, at a way to promote private sector natural gas fueling. We've had a lot of bills before us that have dealt with paying for government-owned stations, and this would be a way to incentivize the private sector. As you all know, natural gas vehicles are a key part of the piece of the puzzle for our country's energy independence. Currently, most of our vehicles are running on fuels that we buy from other countries, and in most cases, they're countries that don't particularly like us. The natural gas that we use in our country, 90% of it comes from the United States, 9% from Canada, and only 1% from outside of North America. An economic boom in natural gas in our country would provide jobs across the country, jobs for Wyoming, and it's no secret that natural gas is the single biggest contributor to our general fund state budget. There's a blue folder on all of your desks that has a lot of natural gas information in it. In particular, what I'll be talking about in here is the 4-page stapled together black and white copy that at the title of it is Drive Natural Gas from Wyoming for Wyoming. And the last page of those 4 pages, it talks about what a clean fuel natural gas is. Generally, the numbers you hear are 25 to 40% cleaner emissions, and you can look there at the carbon structure of methane gas, and you can see why it runs cleaner. You hear of engines going 500,000 miles. You hear of engines going as many as 1 million miles that run on natural gas. The cleanest commercially available vehicle in the United States is a natural gas vehicle, not a hybrid, not an electric vehicle. The resale prices are typically much higher. And also on that same sheet, there's a couple of historical data graphs that show the price of natural gas versus gasoline and diesel, and I had to kind of piece together 2 different graphs to give you a longer-term view of that. But typically, natural gas is $1.50 to $2 a gallon per gas equivalent less than gas or diesel. And the average, one of the testimonies in the committee from somebody who has run a station for 20 years is that the average over that 20 years was $1.41 per gallon of gas equivalent. At the bottom of the page is some information about how many natural gas vehicles are driven in the world. The United States only, we drive 40% of the vehicles driven in the world, but we only drive 1% of the natural gas vehicles in the world. And so it lists some of the other places where natural gas vehicles have thrived. So why isn't it taking off in the United States, and why isn't it taking off in our state in particular, if it's cleaner, cheaper, and domestically abundant? And it all comes down to the cost of the fueling infrastructure and a classic chicken and the egg syndrome. So the cost of the fueling infrastructure is between $500,000 and $1 million for one fueling station, for one fueling unit, for a commercial fueling unit. And so there's a very high barrier for entry. And the reason that it's so important to our state that we build up this infrastructure is that if we do nothing, we'll be the last state in the union to have natural gas fueling infrastructure. The two states immediately to our south have been bullish on natural gas infrastructure incentives, on natural gas vehicle incentives, and just by virtue of their populations, they're going to be growing there much more quickly than we are. So as businesses look to locate in the Intermountain West, they're going to be looking at all kinds of things. What's the job environment like? What's the tax environment like? Do you have high-speed internet? And increasingly, natural gas vehicle fueling capacity is going to be one of those key decisions. Also, as those states south of us build their infrastructure, and on the second page of those, that four-page sheet, it lists how many vehicles are in it picks several states, but two of them are surrounding states to us, how many vehicles there are and how many fueling stations there are. And increasingly, especially the Beehive State is reaching a tipping point to where they're really starting to get a lot of conversions. And as that happens, people are going to start looking on the map, and there's a little map you can pull up on the internet with all the stations nationwide of natural gas vehicle infrastructure. They're going to be looking at where they can go with their natural gas vehicles on their vacations. And if Wyoming doesn't have that infrastructure, they'll be making the decision to go someplace else. On the front page of that four-page flyer, it shows that there are seven commercial stations currently in the state of Wyoming. One of those stations is owned by a utility. One is owned by the state and open to the public. One is a very small private station that takes pretty much overnight fueling, but it's open to the public. And the four other stations are the more typical way that natural gas stations are being built. And this is how they're being built, particularly in the states south of us. And that is, industry comes in, a gas producer will come in, and they will build a station on the property of somebody who already has a fueling station and already has a convenience store. And they'll run that station and kind of eat the infrastructure cost of that station until it becomes profitable enough for the private owner to then purchase it from the gas company. So there were a lot of questions about why don't we just wait for that to happen in our state? And certainly these gas companies can afford to do it, and they should be doing it, and so forth. But the big challenge with that is that we're competing against states with much higher populations and states with much higher incentives to put the fueling stations in. And so, you know, that's just going to be a matter of negotiating with the gas stations, and we're definitely at a disadvantage. One of the other questions is, can you prove that it's going to work? And I can't prove that it's going to work. I can't. There's no empirical evidence that this is going to work or not work. But if you look at the third page, I think it's the third page in there, it talks about the real barrier of getting into this industry. And again, if you're looking at a gas station, that costs $750,000, and you put a certain 10-year loan, 4% interest, what the typical margin for fuel is, which is 50 cents, and then kind of figure out a gallon per gas equivalent of vehicles and so forth. What you end up with is it takes about 216 typical vehicles, just to pay the debt service on that station. So what a business person is looking at is how likely is it that I'm going to get to those 216 vehicles? And so you have to start eating away at that number in order to get to a position where somebody's going to be able to make that as a financial business decision. So the first thing we come up with is the federal incentive, which is $30,000. And that takes the first 8.64 vehicles off of that 216 number. The second, if our state sales tax initiative goes forward, that would be another 10.8 vehicles off of that 216. That's still not enough to make financial sense, but as these businesses then start negotiating with, if I have a trash company and I can get them to convert 4 vehicles over into natural gas, that's going to take another 43 just regular cars off of my list of 216. If I can get 2 Class 8 tractors to convert, that's going to take another 40 off. Okay, so now I'm looking at around 100 vehicles, and now I can start to see where we might be able to get to the number I need for it to make sense to me financially. At the bottom of that page, and this is just the last thing I'll talk about, on the fiscal note, it talks about the cost of a station being $750,000, the equipment being 90% of that, state average sales tax 5.38%. So even if we doubled our current infrastructure, the sales tax impact to that combined for the state, counties, and towns over the 4-year time period, even if we doubled our infrastructure, would be $220,000, an average annual cost of around $55,000. And I know we don't like sales tax incentives, but we have precious few tools that we can use in this state to try to incentivize businesses. We need to use sales tax incentives carefully, but this is a case where we have a whole lot to gain, particularly in economic development, if we pass this kind of incentive. And the other thing is, we have to be willing to let the sun set on these sales tax exemptions. We keep talking about reasons we don't want them is that they go on forever. Well, this ends in 4 years, and we need to look at it in 4 years, and we need to be willing to make some of those tough decisions. So I'll stand aside for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few questions. I agree with all of the benefits of natural gas vehicles, but my questions are ones of fundamental fairness. Why is it that we as the state of Wyoming believe that we can pick winners and losers by meddling in the free market? What is it that we tell competing fuel stations when we are funding their competitors with tax breaks, and what do we tell the folks who've already gone ahead and built these stations without the tax breaks about the tax breaks that they didn't get?
Representative Petroff, would you like to take those questions now, or would you like to? Okay. Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the stations, you'll also find in your packet that the two stations that were privately built, not built by the gas companies, both have letters in there in support. Actually, I'm sorry. The one private station has a letter in there of support, and one of the other companies that has 3 stations in there was also in support. And in the committee meeting, there was another station owner there in support. I haven't heard any opposition from anybody who already has put these fueling stations in. And as far as picking winners and losers, I think we're just making more options open available to our citizens rather than choosing specifically what's going to be best for them.
Oops. Chairman Semlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been on the Revenue Committee long enough where I think we've had at least 2 interim studies where we've looked at different exemptions, property tax exemptions, sales tax exemptions, thoughtfully considered them, and we find that once we put them on, they're very difficult to get off, particularly irregardless of what's in this bill, that it would sunset after 5 years. That being said, you know, we need to take a careful look at each of them. And when I take a look at what's contemplated here with the sales tax exemption on these fueling stations, I think, you know, you have to say that this is really an appropriation from the general fund to out for the people's money. And I'm not sure that we can really justify the investment here, because I'm not sure the benefit will be there. So I'd urge some caution on this bill.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, it was stated that there's no guarantee that these incentives will work. I would submit that there is a lot of empirical evidence that the free market does work. We don't need to pick winners and losers in government. We don't need more corporate welfare. Let's let the free market operate. I feel confident that if there's a demand for these stations, they will be built, and they can be built without government welfare and assistance. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I think in the interest of time, I echo the sentiments of the former speaker. Free enterprise is going to take care of this. In the benefits, we all agree the benefits are there. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anyone's against the idea. But if the market's there, if the incentive is there down the road, enterprise has the wherewithal. Industry has a wherewithal within this area to develop their markets, and the investment in the state of Wyoming back into these is what they ought to be doing, rather than looking for a handout from our state with another exemption, which we know is not going to get pulled off the books, as I've seen over the last couple of years. I'd encourage you to vote against this bill.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to stand and speak in favor of the bill. I think that the good speaker and my good legal friend from Washakie County really make some of the points that support the need to have this tax exemption in place. We are indeed not trying to pick winners and losers, and in fact, the people that have stepped up to the plate has been the industry. There's only one public station thus far in the state. The rest of them, the industry, noting well that in order for this to take off, they have to invest in the communities and help the private sector get this portion of the industry going forward. So they've either set up facilities or they've set facilities up in harmony with on property belonging to private industry, to the private sector, and then they've converted their fleets to natural gas so that they would help participate in the process of using natural gas as a nucleus to get this going. We talk about loss of revenue from the tax exemption. The expenditures to put these facilities in are just substantial. $750,000 is a huge investment for an individual to put in any town in a retail store. And if we don't allow the exemption, we certainly, if we do allow the exemption, we lose about $36,000 a year. But if we allow that exemption, we gain that money back in sales tax or in property tax in the ongoing years. The equipment that they used to put into place is not real property. It would be deemed personal property, therefore would not be exempt from sales tax, and would in the future come back as personal property tax. Without the exemption, it surely would be an incentive for a private business individual not to put in the fueling facility. You know, in the infant days of motor fuel, you'd go to the hardware store or the General Mercantile, where they had a drum in the back of their store filled with gasoline, and you would fill your vehicle. And as the natural courses, our good representative from Casper pointed out, private industry kind of moves ahead. With the technology it takes to compress the natural gas to the point that we can fill a station, basically we're reversing the process. We've taken high-pressure natural gas and we brought it into a community by cutting down the pressure from pounds to ounces, and now we have to repressurize it up and compress it like you would an air compressor in order to put enough volume of that compressed gas into a vehicle. The equipment needed to do that is just expensive. And for a private businessman such as any one of us to look at that with return on investment, it takes a few years to do that. I've looked and read at personal studies of these sorts of stations in Colorado and Utah, and there's a substantial setback and loss over the first 2, 3, even 4 years before you start turning a profit. I think that this tax exemption would just be a benefit to help them endure those initial years before the market is up to the point that will allow them to be profitable. I would encourage you. I think it's a good bill, and this isn't the only industry that we help. I think we have a facility here in Cheyenne that now does data processing, that there were some incentives and some things that we've done to help bring them into the state. I think that we've done that over the course of the years for various industries, various technologies. So we're not writing a new chapter in the book to do this, and I would encourage you to vote for it.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my comments are the following. You know, the sponsor makes a lot of good points about natural gas, and I like natural gas, and you like natural gas, but what we're talking about here is I like to look at it as it's a tax expenditure. You know, from the standpoint of the Appropriations Committee and balancing the books, if one of these is, or 10 of these is built, you look at the fiscal note here, you know, and these are rough numbers, I admit, but, you know, if an average one involves, $675,000 worth of equipment, there's an exemption of $36,315. Now, the way that would eventually end up on the goldenrod, if you want to go back to what we talked about earlier today, it's an expected revenue number that will go down, but of course it won't go down during this budget cycle because it hasn't been, you know, confirmed how many of these would be built. But anyway, I guess all I'm saying is you got to look at this as really almost like an appropriation, you know, a potential appropriation for every one of these that's built. And I don't know if I do it the right way. I'm not saying I do, but whenever I look at an exemption like this from the standpoint of the state, I always look for two criteria that needs to be met before I can support them. And one of them is, you know, is there a clear path to recouping the revenue somewhere else as an intended consequence of this exemption? You know, and if this were to happen in this case, it would be if we could encourage more people to buy natural gas vehicles. Natural gas vehicles cost $10,000 or more than an average vehicle, just like it. You know, you can see that there's going to be some payback there. You know, maybe we'd sell, like one speaker said, it might cause ad valorem taxes to go up marginally for that business, and we, you know, there'd be a recoup in that regard. And maybe there'd be some recoup as far as selling more gas means that our severance tax would marginally increase and those kind of things. So, you know, I'll give the system that. I think there is a fairly clear path to recouping some of the revenue that we're giving up with the exemption. But the next one is where I have the problem, and that is it clearly needed at the margin, you know, at the make or break type, build or not build type decision? Is this the type of exemption that would be the tipping point that would cause the investment to all of a sudden look attractive, where if the exemption wasn't there, it wouldn't be attractive? And that's where I have trouble. I cannot see how, when you're building something that costs $750,000 or $800,000 to build, why, if you lowered the cost of it effectively by $36,000, that all of a sudden then it's feasible. I think
I just don't see if this is a critical trigger that would allow or that would induce these kind of investments. Like some speaker had said already, the way these have been built often in the past is that industry, and not only in this state but other states, industries get involved because it's in their self-interest, which is fine, to promote their product, to sell their product, and they'll front-end the cost of these things. You know, if we were to put this exemption in, very likely the industries that we're talking about would be the ones that would be eligible for this tax exemption. And, you know, I just, I'm not a real big fan of exemptions in the first place, but I just can't see that we've got any indication that this is critical in making those decisions for industry or anyone else. So I think you need to use some judgment here, maybe some caution when you vote on this. Thank you.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am one of the committee members that voted this out of committee, and I had a couple of reasons. One is that I will thank the bringer for the sponsor of the bill for bringing in, and it's forward-thinking. It's forward-thinking about the future of transportation in this state. Whether you're on the side of predicting or picking winners and losers in this case, whether you look at it as government welfare, whether you look at it in a strategic point of view of energy independence, or whether you look at it in terms of recouping revenue, those are all considerations about what we're talking about here is a tax exemption. And I've been down that road with tax exemptions here for the last 8 years. And I realize the good chairman has some very good points about whether those tax exemptions will benefit us in the way he asked his questions. But I do believe the education about natural gas and natural gas vehicles has to start here. This body needs to be educated about the natural gas future that it holds for Wyoming's transportation industry. That was my reason for supporting the bill, to bring it to this body so we could have this discussion. I would encourage you to examine the forward thinking, to look at it in that terms. I know that I've said before that this body doesn't interfere in commerce, and I'm still of that opinion. But like I said, my feelings were to get this dialogue started so we can have these discussions and we can have these perspectives on how we view tax exemptions. I would continue to support the bill for those purposes of having this discussion, because it'll go to hopefully it goes to the other side. They can have the same discussion, and we can come to some conclusions about tax exemptions, about natural gas, the future here in Wyoming. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listening to this discussion, I hear some very interesting points about government handouts and that sort of thing. You know, we start using those words that the talking heads use, we're missing the point, and we're not doing the discussion any favors here. Everybody in this chamber comes here with things that they want to do, projects that they want to see done. Sometimes these projects are so far out there that they need to be incentivized. The money is sitting there waiting in the wings. This is not something new that we've decided we're going to take on in the state. Natural gas-fueled vehicles is something we've been working on quite a while. It just didn't evolve overnight, and it's not some brainstorm that we've been working up. So when I hear these comments that say that we're going to choose winners and losers, we've evaluated what this will do. We are trying to find equal ground between those people that are there already in the market and how we can incentivize this and jumpstart it. That's what we're trying to do here, is move our economics forward with the cutting-edge technologies and be in the front of the pack. Because I can only remind this body, if you're not the lead dog, the view never changes. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman Blickrey.
Mr. Chairman, we had some great discussion in committee on this bill, and for me it comes down to this. If I was a person or a company that owned a very large amount of a product, I would be looking for ways to promote the use of that product where I live. And I would just absolutely love it if the state chose to use the people's money to promote it for me. But I would also realize that it would be my responsibility as the owner of that product to promote it myself. That is why I will be voting no on this bill.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, incentivizing new technologies which benefit this nation, and specifically Wyoming, is a good thing, and I stand on and for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had a lot of these discussions over the past few years when I've been here, and as I've gone around and listened to the pluses and minuses of getting government involved, and I guess the word is called incentives to try to get businesses to come here. In one of the other organizations that we have that do a lot of funding around the state, I just keep coming up with two things that I think we need to be looking at. And this is the fair market value of what we're looking at, and are we creating unfair competition? And if we can use our money to make sure we're getting fair market value, the return is there, and the no unfair competition with somebody else who's just sitting out here thinking, I think I'm going to do this, and then the government comes in and built, well, I guess I'm not going to do this because I can't really compete with government. So I'm pretty cautious on these type of things. I just like the free market to take care of them. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the presentation was about as clear and thorough as any that I can remember in the years that I've been down here, and I want to congratulate the bringer of the bill is what we used to say. I guess I can say it again. But I do have this question, and maybe it was covered and I just missed it, or it might be in the material and I haven't read it yet. But how many businesses have said to the bringer of this or to anybody that is the background on it, if you just do this, we will come and we'll get started? Now, I'm sure that there are a couple, and I had one at least conversation about that, but is there a broad interest expressed by the people who would be ultimately the beneficiaries of this new commitment by the state to a project, or not? And what have they done so far? And I recognize that the House Bill 186 has only been on the screen of a lot of people until just recently, and it might take a little time to build up that cadre of interest expression. But that's my question. If it's clear, I would like a response.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd actually like to divert that question to the representative from Fremont County because he's a little more involved in that industry.
Representative Larson.
In answering to the best of my ability to the good chairman of minerals, yes, there is interest in conversion or in providing CNG filling stations. The real evaluation, as you all well know, is when you go and tie this sort of venture, is the return on investment. And those people who are making inquiries, and most of them are making inquiries through the Natural Gas Coalition, which is made up of the industry, and who are looking to them on how this is done and trying to get back into that, there certainly is interest, but the caution that people of our nature, each and every one of us, is how, what's the return on investment, how expensive is it going to be, and can I make a
a little money in doing it. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to just clarify one point. One of the other speakers made a very important point that if we are in an industry where we manufacture product, we would certainly like to have the state come in and help make that use my product and to generate revenue for my business. I would point out that thus far, all but one of the facilities in the state has been put in place by private industry, the industry that benefits the most from the sale of natural gas, and they are using some very innovative ways to help the private sector become involved with this, because they realize that every vehicle that converts to natural gas is a vehicle that's pulled out of the conventional stream of using diesel or gasoline. And so they would much rather have the private sector be involved there, to where their customer base stays up at a level that they can continue to operate well into the future generations as a profitable business entity. I think that we will just be I think it's a good investment for the future, and once again would just encourage the House to thoughtfully consider the effect that this would have on in future generations. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some food for thought. I think most of you have been receiving the environmental notices in the mail, and you may have been throwing them away. But they're coming. I think they're coming to every member of the legislature. And if you're paying attention to those, and if you paid attention to the initial announcement that was made by industry some time ago, it was in the major newspaper in the state. You know that that industry thinks that they found another natural gas field in the central part of the state that's larger than the one that we have in the western part of the state. And they're busy doing their environmental stuff. And the last mailer I got even had a little map that said, it had all the steps I have to go through, and it said, you are here. But this is a huge, huge field. So I was talking to the director of the School of Energy Resources, whatever we call it at the university one day, who's probably the most global thinker that we have in our community on such topics. And I expressed to him my frustration that the more successful we seem to be with natural gas, the more of it that we find nationwide, and especially the more of it we find in Wyoming, the less we benefit, because it's driving the price down. And that the revenue that comes from that natural gas is really ultimately in the end for the benefit of our citizens. And he said to me, I just thought it was a phenomenal idea. He said, you know, there's probably two ways to skin that cat. One is to have a lot of natural gas at a high price, and we all know the traditional path that flows into government, and if we do our job correctly, ultimately it flows to the benefit of our citizens. But he said, if you get stymied on that path, which is where we are now, and the more successful you are and the better you do, the less reward there is to our citizens from it, he said, go the other way. And the other way is to give our citizens the benefit of that cheap product. Okay? So if natural gas is $1.35, give our citizens the benefit of that. And he even said, you could sit down, and I would love to know what the representative from Johnson County could cook up on. He could give I'm sure a full class hour lecture on this, but I would love to know what he could cook up on that when you go the other way, because the director of the school said, maybe if you really ran the math and did it right, maybe you could justify subsidizing citizens in Wyoming converting their vehicles to natural gas to take advantage of that price. And when you got all done, there's more benefit flowing that way than there is this way. So that's food for thought, and I share all the reservations I've heard about this, but I'm going to vote for it simply because I think that that every indication I have, this huge gas field comes on, these ones that are coming back east are coming online. Now they're talking about gas on the West Coast. I think this stuff is going to be cheap for a long time. And we have so much of it, we're not going to be able to get as much benefit for our citizens through the severance tax route as we are as trying to find a route that gives our citizens the maximum benefit from the cheap fuel that's right here in our backyard.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, and I would I've heard the conversation about the exemptions. Both one exemption list is T, so obviously there's several exemptions in advance of this, and the other one is J. So we've already provided exemptions for numerous things. So this is something I think is also should be considered. Fuel stations, it was asked whether fuel stations interested in this. In my district, a district that is also blessed by gas, yes, there is interest for fleets. For fleets to come in and have a commercial station where they can go moving in and out of the state between these other gas fields around the country to do their work. So this isn't about winners and losers, folks, because why? I mean, we've already been blessed. We're already a winner. Why not take advantage of winning some of that, having some of that, and go further with it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Petroff.
I think most of what could be said has been said. I think we'd all love for the private market to take care of this itself. But we're also competing against other states who are offering these incentives, and our infrastructure is just not growing. And so is this going to be the tipping point? I don't know, but it could be one of the pieces in the tipping point, and I think that's very important. The other thing I think is important to realize is we right now have a situation where we have low borrowing rates. So if someone wanted to open one of these stations, they could get in for, you know, again, page three on your four-page handout. A couple of years from now, we could be looking at some serious inflation. We could be looking at some serious increases in borrowing costs. And as that happens, it's going to be even more difficult to meet that barrier to open these stations. So I do think the timing is important, and I think it's worth our limited involvement.
Any further debate? Seeing none, I call for the question. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 186 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Division
having been called. All those in favor of the bill, please stand. All those opposed. Like I said, House Bill 186 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sitting above me in the West Gallery, it's not often that somebody comes all the way down here from Campbell County to visit, but when it's my wife, it's a special day. My wife, Rita.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 188. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 188, as introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to public funds, providing that public funds may be invested in interest-bearing deposits as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 188, Investment of Public Funds-Interest-Bearing Deposits, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted yes was Representative Blickery, Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Petroff, and Semlich, and it's signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 188 do pass. And I'll let the gentleman from House District 56 explain the bill.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill before you bears some resemblance to a bill that we passed last session dealing with public funds as deposited in certificates of deposit. And what this does is it expands the treatment that we allowed to those CDs through the bill last year to demand deposits. And I'll just back up and kind of explain the situation we're talking about. And again, this deals with public funds that are in deposit with banks in the state of Wyoming. And it this deals with what are called insured cash sweeps. And essentially the example is maybe you have $750,000 that you're depositing as a public entity. Maybe it's for construction or some other type of issue that's going to require demand on those accounts in fairly short order. Well, what this allows you to do is it sets up a mechanism where that $750 can be spread out almost instantaneously into different financial institutions so that it maintains the FDIC coverage over the $250,000 deposit. So maybe that $750 is split out three ways to three different financial institutions, and it retains the FDIC insurance that it would, that those amounts over the $250,000 would lose. It also requires that a similar amount of money be deposited in the local amount in the local bank. So your $750,000 is going out, but there's also $750,000 coming into the bank to retain that level of deposits and the amount that's available for lending, et cetera, in your local communities. There has been a program that was in place until the beginning of this year called the TAG program. And it allowed for FDIC coverage on these public funds, but no interest to be paid. And that program has since gone away. So this is really to step in. It allows public entities to gain the benefit, though a very small benefit it is, of interest payments on these demand accounts. It also ensures that there's protection for these funds through the FDIC insurance. I guess one sort of final point to make, this is something that you and I get the benefit of all the time. If we want to do this program would be available to you and I as individuals right now. It's just that because of the peculiarities of the way the statute is written, that it is not available to our public entities. So this makes sure that they get the benefit of that as well. So there's security, there's income. All those things that we want our public entities to have. So with that, that's a fairly high-level view of the bill, but I'd be willing to take any questions that folks may have on it.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 188 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 188 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again at 2 o'clock.
Prior to that, let's do committee announcements. Mr. Speaker.
There will be a chairman's meeting today in room 302 upon adjournment to discuss assignment of remaining bills.
Ms. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many of you have asked me about the status of mugs. I will be sending out an email. I have ordered, Representative Conley is holding up the mugs. We have mugs that say 60, she'll do my Vanna White for me, 62nd Legislature. I'll email out the specifics to you, but the mugs are here. They make nice gifts for volunteers, interns, aides, all the members of your family. I realize it's a little early for Christmas, but you can plan ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7 corporations will meet upon noon recess today and Room H18 to discuss House Bill 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation, and House Bill 85, Municipal Jurisdiction Extraterritorial Authority.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, at 8 o'clock a.m. in Room H11. We have three bills. House Bill 195 is Rail Tax Exemption Extension. House Bill 196, Tax Exemption, Small-Scale Off-Grid Electricity Generation. And House Bill 30, Special Purpose Tax Extension. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment tonight in H-17 to hear the four following bills. House Bill 150, Bonds for Certificates of Title. House Bill 142, Vehicle Identification Number Inspections. House Bill 192, Cancer Awareness License Plates. And House Bill 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6 will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7:30 a.m. and to discuss House Bill 120, Game and Fish Violations Restitution, House Bill 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts, and House Bill 135, Snowmobile Permit and Registration Fees 2.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. and H-18 to consider two House bills, House Bill 63, State Primacy on Greenhouse Gas Regulation, and House Bill 140, Environmental Quality Act Permit Intervention.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet at noon recess right now to take up House Joint Resolution 4, Foreign Law Prohibition, House Bill 193, Child Custody Enforcement, and House Bill 67, Criminal Defenses. And tomorrow we shall take a day of rest.
Thank goodness. Chairman Lockhart.
Mr. Chairman, privilege the floor, please. You should have all got through your email an announcement of the first legislative prayer breakfast on Thursday morning at the Egg and I, and I just wanted to remind you of that. And I'd appreciate anybody that can come, and if you have any questions, ask those of us that have been with us for a number of years.
Any further announcements? Seeing none, all those in favor of recessing Committee of the Whole until 2 p.m., please signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Committee of the Whole is in recess.